Blog Talk Radio.
Episode of Dubwise Talk. I am Jude Adara, your host, and I am so happy to have tonight for a recurring appearance on our show, one of the very few to ever do a repeat on our show, but her work is so compelling that we thought it would be befitting to have this beloved sister on the show. Her name is Joanna Sparrow. She is the author of Black Blood, among many other publications that she has under her belt. But before we bring her on, I'd like you to listen to this ad. My good friends at Unan Imports. Greetings, Aquava. Unan Imports. Unan Imports. Unan Imports. They are located at 6971 North Sheridan Road, Chicago, Illinois, 60626. This two-room garden level shop specializes in arts and crafts, body care products, and clothing, mostly from Kenya and West and Central Africa. They also specialize in authentic hand-carved wood masks that have the spirit infused in them, alongside the bags made of kente cloth and knit Rastafarian tapestry carved wood jewelry. The body products include several kinds of pure unrefined shea butter, as well as black soap made from the ashes of leaves, bark, and cocoa pods, mixed with shea butter or palm oil, then cured, which is noted for its deep cleansing properties. Aside from that, Unan Imports exudes an ambiance that is one to remember. Do yourself a favor. Take some time and go over to Unan Imports, located at 6971 North Sheridan Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60626, and see who I call Doc, Brother Al Unan. You'll be glad you did. And we are black. We are black with the highly talented Joanna Sparrow. But before I bring her on, I'd like you to get a little background on this book, this magnificent publication of hers. It reads, "In this day and age, it's looking more and more unsafe being a black male in the United States, since black blood is being spilled at an enormous rate. Black blood means so much more than you can imagine, but one thing is clear, and that is men of color, preferably African-American men, are being slaughtered at an alarming rate before the eyes of the world. What the heck is going on? Has this always been the case for so many unsolved deaths of black males, or are we now all just waking up at the same time to this horrific and unjust behavior of humanity on a group of people who have been long punished for even existing? I could no longer sit by and watch without crying in my soul while writing all of this. As a woman of color, it's difficult to watch what is happening to our world and many places around the world. It's as if the battles and the stress of every man's frustration and confusion is taken out on the black race or African-American male. As a mother of a son, my heart breaks every time there is another killing. The scary part of all this is that the people who are sworn to protect and serve have become judge, jury, and executioner on the spot. When will this heart?" And we will leave it at that. Beloved, we welcome you once again to Dubwise Talk. How are you?
I am well. Thank you for having me.
You are quite welcome, beloved. Without saying, we are in a perilous time in this country. My mother and I have debates quite often, and she's saying these are the last days for all these things is going to be happening all over the world. And I point out immediately that it's not happening in the affluent neighborhoods and it's not happening in Africa. Only here where we are in this hemisphere is it happening. Not even in South America and Brazil, the brothers are not being persecuted. So like you say, what the heck is going on?
That's correct. And it's overwhelming. I mean, we're seeing it every day. And a lot of times it's disguised to look like an accident. And if someone's not coming into our communities and taking our lives, we're taking our lives. So it's almost as if, you know, we can't win for losing, that catch-22. who are dying not only by outsiders, but by our own hands, and it has to stop. We have to wake up.
Well, we all agree that it has to stop, but should we have a consortium and come together and plot a strategy, or should we all just be individually and for the cause of improving our plight, do what we can that is in front of us?
Oh, no, we have to come together. We have to get back to where we were. Our people were, say, 1920, when we had Black Wall Street, and we were in control of a lot of things, and we were self-sufficient. We had our own businesses. We basically supported each other. We basically trust each other. We don't have that anymore. You know, we don't trust each other. So it's very easy to take a life, and it's very easy to stand by someone coming out of the neighborhood and take our lives. We don't have a community where we stop, you know, the tragedy and the killings. So it's easy for the hunter to come in and just set up camp and hunt us down.
You know, when we were brought here on the ships, and those among us who were already here before the first of the colonial ships came, I defy anyone to show a murder. When we were on the ships leaving out of Ghana, I don't believe none of us thought of murdering none of us on that ship, on those ships. We had suicide, but nobody murdered. So my question is for us to contemplate, what do you think was the first murder amongst us in this land? When can you imagine the first murder was, and what precipitated that murder in your imagination?
I would have to say, our existence, we were already here at some. I mean, we've been everywhere, and we've always existed. So I would have to say that first murder would basically cause it to happen. A lot has to do with just the color of the skin, ignorance. You know, the knowledge, what we have, our creativity. We are very creative people with our minds and with our hands. More so than most, and that's been taken away from us. And then when you look at that, and then you look at the color of the skin, and then so much of discrimination and downgrading and putting us under has caused the rest of the world to basically celebrate in that. Even a lot of times we celebrate ourselves and find it hard to believe when you're creative or when we use our minds. But I believe that first killing had to do with just our very presence. And it's been like that, the presence alone, the creativity, the threat of what we are and who we to become.
Oh, no, I think I didn't pose the question properly. I should have asked which amongst the Africans was the first to kill an African, and what circumstance can you imagine where an African would take another African's life? Because we know we weren't killing each other on the ships on the way here. We know that. So once we got here, the first murder had to occur on these shores. And I'm trying to imagine, what would that be? What would precipitate an African to decode himself of all of his ancestral knowledge? Because he had no Christianity at the time when he first got here. So him holding on to all those principles, what made him kill another African?
Jealousy, wanting to fit in, wanting to save his own life. Fear. Control. Manipulation. The I want to live. Don't kill me. You know, I'm good. I'm a good boy. I'm a good girl. No, not me. I'll sell him out. I'll sell her out. You know, you could trust me.
Yeah. That's shameful. That actually happened, and it had to be such an alarming piece of news as the news traveled from plantation to plantation that one of us killed one of us for the first time. That had to be really, really disheartening.
You know what? It had to be that way, but in a sense, that was the only way to survive. As crazy as that sounds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was the reality in which some can survive to tell the story. We all couldn't go, you know what I'm saying? So that was the reality. And when you're in a certain reality, not only do you believe it or you can't escape it, but you adapt to it. You do whatever you need to do to survive. And I'm sure not every African...
Go on, beloved.
Okay. I'm sure not every African basically sold the other one out or was jealous or tried to protect themselves. Some probably just eliminated themselves, did what they needed to do to eliminate themselves because they did not want to participate in that realm, that reality. But for a lot, once fear was introduced, a fear that they had not known, it became easy to initiate a new program.
I can imagine the plantation owners taking their biggest buck to another plantation, and just like they used to have chicken fights, cock fights, well, they did that with the slaves. But that would not be murder. That would be fighting for survival. But I'm talking about murder where a brother plots evilly in his mind and plans and then pounces and makes his move and kills another African. I really would like to see a piece done on that, because that has to be prolific. You know, I don't, that's just the way I think.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, and what I see from that is our people have always been in a position to survive, more so than others.
Correct.
And that first killing, if it was not for survival wanting to be recognized, it's jealousy. We have it today. A lot of the same arguments that we had then, our ancestors had then, still had. So like you say, that buck, if he saw a younger one was coming in, okay, master is going to replace me.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to remove him. I need to get rid of my competition.
Oh, I see.
So
now,
we both can't exist, you know, at the same time with master's love. So one of us have to go. One of us going to be shipped off, or basically downgraded even more.
Yeah.
Competition.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, notwithstanding the black male and female were like living gold to the plantation owners. So if you were to harm one of them, I have a feeling that there was a severe penalty involved. You would probably, if you harm one, you probably have to escape. And, you know, we could do a movie.
I know.
We can do a movie about this. Because if we let our imaginations run, I can see, well, okay, like you say, there was a competition, but he didn't think it out thoroughly. So he didn't think
That's
of
right.
the consequences. So now he loses
right.
his status on the plantation, and he's killed a brother, and now he's got to move with the Indians.
Right.
That's a pretty good
or
move.
Or he sold to some, or he sold to another master.
Or
his wife is taken from him. Or his kids. You know, there was always consequences. And those consequences always centered around the destruction of family.
Yes, yes, indeed. Indeed. Wow.
You know, so if you wanted to save your baby or your son or your daughter from being shipped off, you know, whatever, you did what you had to do. And a lot of times it was competition. Not only just competition, jealousy.
Yeah.
If master came out and gave or showed attention to one more than the other, or had that one to sit down for 5 minutes to take a break, he knew what he was doing. Manipulation, it was mind control. I pay this person more attention just by saying, taste this, or go walk over here, or go sit there, go get me water.
Yes.
I'm giving that person a break from the field. So now I'm going to have everyone in his camp, when I'm not around, becoming his enemy. So I don't have to worry about him running away because they're too distracted with trying to please me and wanting favor from me. So killing becomes more important, more precious than at being killed.
Uh-huh.
If you think about it.
Yes, indeed.
Because it's still survival. It's still survival. I have to survive. I want to be able to work in the house. I want to get my daughter in the house. I don't want my daughter to be raped. I don't want my son to be raped or beaten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what do I need to do? And this family over here seems to have more favor. So you start to, if you can imagine, kind of get in that group and start to isolate yourself with those who feel the same way, and now you're ganging up on one person or one family, and now you hate them for what? Because
exactly.
They got an extra piece of cornbread?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Water?
It's all material.
But in that material was survival. That was their, they had no freedom. Other than the freedom that was given to them.
Yeah.
So that was their freedom.
Yeah.
To walk in the fields for, you know, a while, did not have to work, felt ill, and, you know, their master said at that time, you can rest, which I doubt they did. But if they did do that, it was to cause division within the camp.
Exactly.
Now everybody's bucking for that position to be alpha to their master. It becomes dangerous. Manipulative, mental warfare, it's dangerous. And it's that same warfare mentally that has been passed on, and subconsciously we cannot get away from.
So if we fast forward now from the 1600s up till say the civil rights movement in the 50s and the 60s. I read somewhere where I believe it was John Henry Clark stated that the civil rights movement was tantamount to what did he call it? An opportunity. Instead of actually fighting for civil rights, we fought to eat at white restaurants, and we fought to use the white man's toilet, and we fought to drink the water from the, and fought to go to their schools. But instead, we really were sitting on gold. We had everything a nation had amongst ourselves. So we
and
got
we
hooked.
Didn't see it. Right, we didn't see it because, they made themselves a distraction, and that distraction became a mirror, and all we saw was they're trying to find favor, and when you make something so important than yourself, you forget about your own existence. Mm. You can't even see your own wealth, your own life, and that's what happened. Our people became so stagnant in their way of thinking that they didn't move. They couldn't see. They couldn't hear.
You know, I was listening to Dr. Claude Anderson on his lecture on reparations. And if you haven't heard it, when you get a chance, I strongly urge you to listen to it. He talks about how we and the Indians were both a beaten people. And at the end of the Civil War, when they so-called proclaimed us to be free, the Indians took a different plight than we did. What we did was says, we don't need nothing from y'all. We need to do is get away from this plantation. So we became 0.5% of 1% of all the wealth in the country. Where the Indians, they went to the government of the United States and submitted to them that they are a beaten people and that they have nothing and they have nothing to do anything with. So you are obligated to take care of us. So they get checks every year. Every Indian can go to college for free. They have free medical. They have all kinds of things because of they submitted to the government. So my story is Dr. Claude Anderson has petitioned the government the same way the Indians did it. He's done it for us. We're going to get our reparations, beloved.
Yeah, and it's time. It's long overdue because the whole world enjoys the success and everything that our ancestors have developed. And we don't exist to them because of it.
Exactly. Exactly.
We laid no claim to it. Like you say, the Indians, they laid claim. They laid claim to the fact that we had and it was taken away.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
But they claimed something, you see?
Absolutely, absolutely. We were just so, but now the Indians were not under so much stress as we were. They were never enslaved as we were enslaved. So for us to just get away from the master, you know how you turn on the TV and all you see is junk and you feel better when you turn the TV off? Well, they just wanted to get away from the TV. They didn't get any figure they could do it, you know. But the smart way is the way the Indians did it, and we have to admit that.
Right. But the thing is, too, as a people, we never look out, most of us, not all of us, we never look back at history to see what steps that we should not walk in.
Exactly.
You know, what route we shouldn't take just because it's been taken and we know the end result, you know. And as a people, a lot of times, you know and I know, we have a lot of pride. Even when we're broken, we have a lot of pride as if we can't say we're broken.
Yes, yes, indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with the lovely and the talented. To get back to her book momentarily, but I'd like to let you know that we are brought to you by Lalibela's Ethiopian Restaurant. That's right, Lalibela's. They are located at 5633 North Ashland Avenue in Chicago. Excuse me. And for the finest Ethiopian cuisine, for the finest decorum, for the finest service, I want to tell you, you cannot do wrong by going over and seeing Samson, the owner, and his lovely wife, Heru, the master chef and host. Trust me, it's the best eating in Chicago. Then you want to go for a snack, go to my son's place called Popcorn Haven. They are located on the southwest side of Chicago, conveniently at 111th and Cicero. The name of the place is Popcorn Haven because it indeed is that. They have over 500 flavors of popcorn. That's right, 500 flavors. If you can imagine it, they have it. All right, so we're black with the beloved and talented Joanna Sparrow. Ms. Sparrow, what, in your opinion, can we do to rectify this?
There's a lot of things that we have to do. First is we have to acknowledge that we are out of balance, that we are out of sync, that we are prideful and that we are not stimulated by the things that are happening to us. In fact, we have turned our backs on ourselves, on our community, on our old, I mean, the citizens, on our young people, you know, and we have to rectify that. Second, we have to begin to educate each other, not just with the things that's happening within the world, but with history and
yes.
where we're going and, you know, set a roadmap. A destination.
Yes.
This is where we are right now. This is where we plan to be. And we have to teach those generations. We cannot deny those generations. We have to deal with our young men that's walking around feeling that they are to protect at 13, 14, and 15.
Yes.
You know, and that's
yes.
not their place. They're in a position of learning. You know, and they're not learning because they're too busy trying to defend something that they don't understand that's been here longer than them. And it's outthinking them and it's out-strategizing them. And they have to learn how to think, use their hands and not, you know, grab a weapon or be quick to anger or want to fight. Because then when we get in an emotional upset, there's no reasoning. There's no balance. There's no talking. And then chaos rules. You know, we have to come together. We have to open up businesses. We have to support each other. We have to put the money in the community. We know it's there, but we give it to everyone else but each other.
That's absolutely correct. You know, we look at our competitors and all the – even I go to – by often I go to Indian Town in Chicago, and I just like the vibration over there. It's one last – part of Chicago that is natural. So I go over there and I'll buy my fruits and vegetables from time to time. And every one of those Indians are driving late model SUVs, German, Lexus, all of that, all of them wearing Indian gold. And I'm saying, I'm over here putting my money in their pockets and I have nothing. And they don't come over to our neighborhood for nothing except to profit on us by putting a store there and selling our children junk and candy. That's another story. But we cannot compete. We cannot compete if all we have is 2 cents and our competitors take our other 98 cents from us while we give it to them.
Right. Right. We have to be a successful people.
Yes.
You know, we can kind of get rid of that pride by giving and building success, because when we build success, we become, we exist to each other. Then the world can't help but see us because we existing despite what is going on. We are successful with ourselves despite what's going on. We need no acknowledgement. We invest in each other. And then when you have that, then you're not just going to let anybody go into your neighborhood and rob and steal from you. You're not going to let it happen. And then the world is going to take notice. They're going to look and say, wait, hold on. That's a successful people. They are successful. They are positive. They are creating, innovating. They are doing things. How could that happen? Because then the world begins to protect that creativity, that specialness about the people, that success. Then we lose those names like laziness, those labels, and no good, and, you know, always up to something, and, you know, always stealing. Because now we have something, and we didn't give it away. We gave it to each other. And if we can do that, then the whole world will stand up and take notice, because then they'll be shouting and raising their hand like, okay, can I get in with you guys? Because that's what they did before, and instead of getting in, they took over. We have to change that.
We're going to take a quick break at this time. We're here with the lovely and the talented Joanna Sparrow. We will be right back after this song by Sister Desiree, Starlight.
Memorize a form of love each time that you are near.
Yes, that was Des Irie out of the fabulous city of St. Louis, Missouri. Whenever you're in St. Louis, go check out Des Irie, and the name of the band escapes me all of a sudden, but it'll come to me. Sister Joanna, tell me, how do you relax and get away from the pressures that fetter your soul?
Oh, my gosh. I would have to say through meditation.
Ah.
That's number one.
Ah.
Exercise and rest. You know, we need that. I mean, we need to reboot, you know, change that energy vibe. For me, it has to be meditation. That's the only way I can kind of clear my mind and get back to what I need to get back to.
So tell us about your discipline in meditation. Do you do it daily or twice a day, or how often and when do you do it?
In the morning, early in the morning. I try to do it early in the morning when I get up.
Uh-huh.
In the evening. And sometimes before I go to bed, not always possible, depending on if there's something inside of me that's saying, okay, it's time to write, which that voice is always constantly there. But there's times when it's kind of on low volume, I should say, when it's time to meditate and basically take some time to gather my thoughts or just clear my head, just empty out so I can allow whatever needs to come to me to come to me in order to write or just to basically, you know, be healthy emotionally, mentally, physically.
I really, really treasure silence. It is so valuable to me, and I find myself in a very, very embryonic state, if you will, when there's nothing on at all, and maybe some natural nature sounds like birds chirping or crickets, you know. But other than that, that silence is so beautiful. And then that is the time when I get visions and solutions. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, that's the best time. I mean, that's when life, that's when the universe speaks to you. That's the best time. You hear so much and you see so much, not even with your naked eyes, you know, not even with your ears, but you hear. You hear within your core. You hear within your, you know, your soul, your car, your body. You hear more things that you would not hear with the daily distractions and the daily noise of the TV going or, you know, someone talking. That silence is golden, I tell you.
Exactly. I find myself not turning the television on sometimes until in the late afternoons. And when I turn it on, I hear all the banter and the inconsequential back chatter, and I just turn it back off because all they're doing is selling garbage. You know, I turn it back off and get back to my, or I'll get on my keyboards, you know. So tell me, what is your favorite word?
I would have to say persistence.
Ah, persistence. Yes. I notice you are very persistent in your publishing and exposing your work. You're relentless, and I'm sure it's paying off. But I see ads for your books in many, many places, and I have a smile knowing that I once had, well, now twice had you on my show.
Yes, and that's a wonderful thing. It's always a challenge trying to get the message out. But, you know, it's almost as if the universe and that insight opens up the door for me because it has to be out there, and it won't let me rest until I do what I need to do.
Yes, indeed. Well, we are highly honored to have you on our show, and time has waned. So I would like you at this time to tell the audience how one can purchase your books, where they can get them at, and what their costs.
Okay, I am on Amazon, I'm on iBooks, iTunes, Apple. My ebooks are anywhere from, I would say, $2.99 to my paperbacks could be anywhere from $5 to $7. My goal is to make sure that everyone can afford it. I also have books on Smashwords, and I've dropped the prices within the last week to all of the same books that you would see on Amazon in ebook format is $0.99 to $2.
So an affordable, it is an affordable price, ladies and gentlemen. Support the sister and do a good deed. The good deeds is what's going to get us into passing through the halls of my eye. Nothing else. It's going to be good deeds. So let's do some good deeds with each other. We got Kwanzaa coming up. Let's adopt a business and choose a business and spend $100 for the Kwanzaa season. Without any further ado, I just like to say I enjoyed having you, beloved. I look forward to the next time. And I would like everyone to spread unification, love, and joy.